Yeah.
He's a general.
Hello and welcome to Springboard Virtual University. My name is Albert Okran, welcoming you to Ghana's foremost developmental program running since 2008. This is brought to you by the Springboard Roadshow Foundation and proudly sponsored by MTN Pulse, the enterprise group UMB Bank, with media support from the multimedia group and the graphic business. So guess what? Today is the grand finale of our special, highly popular, very engaging series of conversations we call the Dawn's Conclave. So what is the whole idea? Throughout this month of April, we've been bringing you the thoughts, the ideas, the prescriptions of leading voices in education, managing education at the very highest level, sharing first their five leadership life lessons with us, and secondly, sharing their five prescriptions, ideas, thoughts for world-class education here in Ghana. To bring down the curtain on this series, I have a very, very special person, and you will agree with me because she is somebody who is the flag bearer of nurses in Ghana. And if you don't agree, don't worry, you will agree with me when you hear her. She is the first nurse to be appointed as a professor, the first nurse to be appointed as vice chancellor in Ghana and in West Africa, and the second in the whole of Africa. No wonder they call her Prof. One. She is the vice chancellor of the University of Health and Allied Sciences, all the way in the beautiful city of Ho. My guest, Professor Lydia Aziatou. Prof, good to see you.
Thank you.
It's an honor and a blessing to finally get to meet you.
I'm honored.
And congratulations for the first. I love it when people are first, because they literally make it possible for many others to look at them and see, if she has done it, I can do it. Do you feel that sometimes you are almost like a flag bearer?
More than that.
tell me how it feels when people their numbers look at you.
To your audience, and I'm privileged that you gave me the opportunity. So if you ask me how I feel that I've achieved something. I feel that I've made it possible for nurses and midwives to enter some spaces that hitherto were not found. So I feel that I've made it, you know, such that somebody can dream to become.
I know your background as a Christian and a member of the Calvary Baptist Church in Ho. Would you say that this is almost like a divine mission that you think that you are on?
Divine mission. Probably. Because my father was not a Christian, a staunch Christian. For my grandmother, my father's mother was rather a Catholic. So from the village where I grew up, it was my grandmother who took me along anytime she was going to church. Growing up, you grow up and you go to one church or the other. But I've been a Baptist since 2002, thereabouts. And at that time, I was already in the university. So I wouldn't say becoming a vice chancellor is divine, but I would say that my life as a whole has been covered. My life as a whole has been shielded by grace.
Did you always think you would be a nurse?
Let me start by saying that I grew up in a typical one-man village, not a town, not a community. So my father or my grandfather then settled in the eastern region in the village near Nsawam. They call that place Abrodiem. So when you are there, no lights, nothing. So you see aircrafts in the air. Those days, I thought that I could be a cabin crew, an air hostess. I thought that it would be very interesting to work in the aircraft. But when I grew up and I realized that even the aisle It's so small, and the way my sizes and my height, could I even work as an hostess? I wonder. So I think that nursing was not my first choice. It wasn't sold to me. Nobody marketed nursing to me. So I became a nurse after my O-levels in the Ghana Secondary School, now Ghana Senior High School in Koforidua. I did the A-levels. I didn't pass my physics and chemistry. So after my national service, I ended up at the nursing training college. I went there because I knew that when you become you do nursing, you don't struggle to get a job. Those days, 1997, I finished. I did nursing because I felt it was an area that I could enter with the qualification that I had at that time. But fortunately, when I entered the school that I attended, my nursing training college, which was the Kolebu Nurse and Midwifery Training College, there was an opportunity for extra classes there on the premises. So I decided to use my nursing training allowance to pay for extra classes. And I didn't do science again. I now did the arts. So before I finished nursing training, I had gotten my papers for university. I mean, the A-level I passed. And I also did very well in the nursing training college. So instead of working for three years after qualification to qualify for study leave, we were fortunate to have the director of HR who came for our graduation program and promised three of us who did very well to, he will support us to get permission of study leave to go to school. Two of my colleagues traveled. One went to the US, one went to the UK. Those days in the 90s, there was the opportunity to travel because of the shortage of nurses in the West. So you could travel easily as a nurse. So the two left, I was left behind, and I applied for the university in 1998 and I got admission. So I went back to the gentleman, one Dr. Dolo, who gave the promise and he honored his word. So I came to the university in 1998 to pursue my first degree in nursing. I want to go back to the first lesson that I want to draw attention to, which is equal opportunity and perseverance. My father had over 30 children. He was married through three women. My mother alone had 13. I was the ninth born of my mother.
Wow.
But my father ensured that all his children went to school. Those days in the village, there was discrimination against women going to school or girls going to school. They felt that, our place was in the kitchen. So you give birth and you look after the children. I want to draw attention to the fact that people must be given opportunity and they would, prove that they deserve that space or otherwise. I don't think anybody should, intentionally try to prevent people making decisions to say that you don't deserve this or that. I think that equal opportunity, if my father didn't take me to school, I don't think I'll be here today.
Yeah.
And I also want to draw attention to the fact that you don't need to wait for the opportunity before you become ready. So, yes, the beginning opportunity is there, but subsequently, if we talk about leadership positions, you need to do something extra on your own through different approaches or methods to get ready so that when that opportunity is given or you get that opportunity, you can deliver on your mandate.
Is that what drove you to invest your nursing training allowance in improving yourself and then also pitching for a first degree at a time when your colleagues had gone for?
So what drove me to use my nursing allowance for extra classes was the fact that I knew what God has given me. I knew that if I push myself, I could do better. I knew that I don't belong to the lowest level. I thought that there was something that was not completely explored or evident at the level that I found myself. So I remember the first time we went to the ward as a group. We went to the in-service training unit and we were introducing ourselves and adding some funny comments. And I said, I'm the senior nursing officer. So in the hospital, the nurses grade, there's one level that is SNO, so senior nursing officer. So since that day, my colleagues were calling me SNO, yes, SNO, because I said I'm the senior nurse.
And at that time, what level were you at?
At that time?
Yes.
What
level were you at?
Oh, no, a student. Like, we're now being trained. So when you are training, you go to the hospital as part of the training. So I was still a student then. So when I finished, those days in the 90s, the nursing then and now, there are differences because we have moved forward as a profession. Those days we didn't have any master's, PhD, professional specializations. So the contribution, the knowledge level and the skill level of nurses those days, maybe I'll say it was lower because now we have higher education and qualification in the profession. So I used my allowance to do extra classes because I felt that I could be a nurse of a difference. I could change the status quo of nursing. So I used my allowance to do the classes. Then when I came to the university also, I put in my maximum efforts to get the higher GPA in my class those days, first class. And that also helped me to get Unilever scholarship for my master's. And when I finished the first degree, I combined nursing and psychology because I felt that the nursing alone, my brain was not used enough so I could add more. So I combined nursing and psychology. When I finished psychology department, then the head of department wanted me to join as a TA, and then the nursing school was also calling me, so I decided to join the nursing school. So I didn't go back to the hospital as a clinical nurse. I joined the University of Ghana way back in 2001 as a senior staff to help in the training of the students and all that. We were three that were identified there also again, but after a few months of the service, two of my colleagues who were also identified traveled, one to the US, one to the UK again, and I was left behind. And so after working in that level as senior staff for 2001 and 2003, I started my master's still at the University of Ghana with support from Unilever Foundation. I think those days they were giving $1,000 for those that they were awarding a year to help defray the cost of your fees and all that. So let me also say that a level 400 during my undergraduate program, I had my first child. So not leaving Ghana also was because I wanted to be here for my son. I wanted to make sure I could, you know, mother him and bring him up the way I wanted him to be. Fortunately, he stayed on the narrow road. He's now in the fifth year in medical school. I'm very proud of him. So I didn't travel. The second opportunity, I didn't travel because of my son. The first one, I felt that because I knew that if you travel, it's difficult to go to school because the school fees out there is very, very high. And I didn't think that the level that I had, you know, a state registered nursing certificate, was all I could get from. I wasn't satisfied. So by the second one, I didn't travel because of my son. So I joined the University of Ghana in 2001 and was working there till last year, August, when I left to home. But the second lesson, I mean, you could pick more, but for me, the second lesson is the fact that for you to get anywhere, you don't give up. When you fall, you get up again. No matter how many times you fall, you get up again. So my A-levels, I didn't pass my chemistry and physics. Well, I changed to arts and entered the university. And again, I started my PhD in 2007 in the UK through Get Fund Scholarship. And then again, I had to discontinue the program. So the first year of the program, everything was going on well, and then I lost my mother. So before I traveled, I had my second child, my first girl. So I left her, a 7-month-old baby, with my mother and a house help at that time. And so if you are a nurse and you travel also, you get work. So I was also working in Cardiff. I was working in one nursing home and the other. So by that time, I said, okay, so I've worked my house that I was building, has reached a level that I'm quite happy with. So let me now concentrate on my studies, and I lost my mother. Then I had to come back. So fortunately or unfortunately, my husband was also with me in the UK at that time. So both of us rushed home. But the wahala started because I couldn't get anybody I could trust to care for my two kids at that time. You know, if you are a mother, you are a woman, it's more complex. It's more, the social cultural expectation of us women is different from the man. So when I came back, after the funeral, I had to take. So at the end, I took more than 6 months off my studies to sort out my family. At the end, I got somebody. I left briefly, and then in the UK, when you enrolled the first year, after the first year, you have to do an assessment, an evaluation, for you to roll out or roll over to the proper candidature. But because I left and I wasn't doing much, I couldn't cross that bridge. So at the end, I wasn't allowed to move onto the full candidature as a PhD student. It was difficult. If I say difficult, it means that you are not achieving your goal, okay? And so, and then the one who was taking care of the kids for me also, there were some challenges. I had to come back. And when I came back, my father also died.
Oh, no.
So in the process of the funeral, you know, when you're sad, people try to console you. And then I got pregnant again with my last child now. And so all my children, too, has been cesarean. So, well, are you going to go back knowing that you have to go through surgery? So I was here and working with my supervisors, but along the line, I had to just take a step back. I discontinued the program officially, and then I returned to work. Because I was on study leave, so I had to go back to work. Now, you went to school. He didn't come back with a certificate. He came back heavily pregnant. And so I wrote my report, then took my maternity leave. So the period, 2-1 months to my delivery and after my delivery, were my lowest moments. Lowest moments because, it got about 5 distinctions out of 6 subjects or so at the nursing training college level, higher GPA in your class, you finish your master's in record time, Ghana A nurse, and you can't finish a PhD. Well, what is happening? And within the nursing and midwifery fraternity, is also more women than men. And therefore, I mean, through no fault of anybody, somebody will say something. And so those days, I had to do a lot of reflection. So the third lesson I would say that is to do a self-assessment, a reflection, to do what I call, how did it happen? How did I go wrong? What could I have done better? What did I do to get here? So I took time off after, of course, emotionally you would grieve, you cry, but I had to go back and look at the comments I received on my work from my supervisor. Those that I thought they were being racist or something, so had to look at it with that openness of mind to really see what the problems are. So I realized that I needed to build the whole foundation again. The nursing and midwifery profession, the training is heavy on skills, heavy on patient care, heavy on hospital service. The training doesn't prepare us to write. It doesn't prepare us to research. So per the comment I received in the UK, I realized that I needed to go back and build the foundation of my writing skills. So I had to come down to the level of, let's say, class one. So my son, English teacher, I used to have one-on-one with him. He would give me something to write and he would correct me. Those days when you say run-on sentence, commas, place, what are you talking about? You know, passive sentence. Okay. So I had to go through that. And I went to the Department of Linguistics to see one Professor Sir, who has retired now. And the Professor Alemna, he also gave me some very good books. So I had to build that skill of writing all over. But one thing that I did in the UK that helped a lot was that even though I was working, I was still also focused on all the training programs that the university had. So I was in the University of Glamorgan, now the University of South Wales. So we had a lot of training programs, research training programs, use of bibliographic manager software. I used my own money to buy those softwares. And that also helped a lot. So the self-reflection, critiquing yourself, humbling yourself to say, that is what I don't know. And so you have to learn it. And how do you learn it if you don't go to other people who know and don't go on the net, on YouTube to learn? So I did a lot of self-tutoring and going to people to help. Crossing that bridge, then I said, okay, I wouldn't cause financial loss to the states because UK school fees is expensive. Get fund paid, but I didn't finish. I wouldn't be an embarrassment to my profession, my family, my friends who believe in me so much. And so I took a personal loan and enrolled in the University of the Western Cape in South Africa. Fortunately, I got a supervisor that I have met at a conference previously. And so I engaged him and told him, that is what I started and couldn't finish, but I want to re-enroll. Okay, so I wasn't transferring, but I was enrolling fresh. So I asked him in South Africa, what is the minimum number of years you can finish your PhD? He said 2 years. I said, okay. So I enrolled somewhere 2011. By 2012, November, I'd finished. 2013, March the 19th, I graduated with my PhD.
Less than 2 years?
Yes. How did I do it? So that is why I mentioned the lesson of that correction. What did I do wrong? And will I continue doing the same thing again? So once you know what you lack and you know that I can do this to make it better, and then you solve that problem, you can now jump. So when I went to South Africa, the topic area was the same, but the focus of the study changed from what I was going to do in the UK before I didn't finish. So I put in all efforts. So between 2011 to, let's say, the time I finished and I continued, the earliest I sleep is 1 a.m. plus 1:30 a.m., Monday to Sunday. And if I would not sleep that late, that means that my husband has come to visit or something has happened. So let me also just let viewers know that one thing about our contest about women is the fact that the society expects too much from us. So one thing that has helped me navigate my space and come up is the fact that I didn't have a resident husband. My husband lives in the north. He lives in Bogam, in Accra, with their children. So I didn't have to always go to the kitchen and be cooking, doing this and that for the man. I channel all that space, free time, into my work. And that also helped me a lot. Another thing that helped me was the fact that I was being very, very fortunate to have reliable people staying with me as helps. So my first help stayed with me for about 12 years or so before she went. I mean, she learned how to sew, she got married and left. The current one is, this, I think it's the 13th year she's staying with, a widow of two. She's even older than me, but if you are, I mean, in a similar situation that I found myself.
For the benefit of those who just may have joined us, your first lesson is about equal opportunity.
Yes.
And I love that very much. I must meet the man with two, three wives and 30 children who managed to educate all of them. He must be given a national award for...
But he's late now. My dad is late.
It will make it posthumous. The second one you mentioned in passing was to develop yourself in advance, but you chose to give that second lesson to don't give up. Your third lesson, interestingly, that you would like to highlight is personal reflection and self-assessment, which you've given different angles to. And I love the part that says that because you humbly examined your own choices and the outcomes and did not like what you had done, you give yourself another chance and say, let me pay for it myself and do it. And within 2 years, you got your PhD. Awesome. Push on from there and let's see what other lessons you can pick up.
So the other lesson I would bring in is mentorship.
Mentorship, okay.
Mentorship, you receiving mentorship and also mentoring others. So that will dovetail into preparing the next generation. Because all of us will leave one day after 60 officially is over. Who takes over from you? And would that person be ready to move it above where you left it off? So all of us as leaders must remember that as we receive mentorship from others, we must mentor others also and therefore prepare for the next generation.
Especially in the field in which you've risen out of, you still will see yourself as being part of the nurses and midwives fraternity, and,
exactly.
and they will see you too as part of them. But in that particular field, I can relate very much to the fact that you talk about mentoring others, being mentored, and of course also mentoring others, because I just can imagine a conference in the near future of academics who are nurses and all of them being profs, and you standing up to address the conference and people thinking back to see, just imagine how many years ago it was not the norm, but now, as they say, the ceiling has been broken and many can get to do the same thing. And that's very inspiring. So your fourth lesson is about mentorship. What will be your fifth lesson?
Yeah, so that is what I'm saying, that's preparing for the next generation. Who okay. takes over from you?
Okay.
So I'm saying this because over the years, our spaces have been, because I know you, because we are from the same whatever group, whatever. I don't want to mention things. But the next generation or who takes over should be based on who qualifies, the skills of the person, but not just relationships and I wouldn't want to use the word politics, but unfortunately within our context has become the issue. So within the whole fraternity, whether education, health, wherever I find myself, it should be that this person that you are giving the opportunity to, that's why from the beginning I said equal opportunity, is a person who, I'm not giving it to you because of any other thing, but because you qualify and you can deliver.
Your selection must be based on your qualification and ability to deliver and not on any other consideration. I tell you what, I could have listened for the next 3 hours and I wouldn't even realize how time flies, because my guest for today, Professor Lydia Aziatu, is telling a story about what was called impossible, made possible. And on the wings of these lessons, we see that whatever dream you also have can be possible. What are the lessons? Number one, equal opportunity. Number two, don't give up. That means that no matter what obstacles you may face, do not walk away from your dream. Number three is personal reflection and brutally honest self-assessment that should drive the changes you make. Number four is mentorship. Receive mentorship, but also give mentorship to others. And the fifth one is what I want to call succession planning. Ensure that the right person is appointed to succeed you or to follow through from what you are doing based on their skills and ability to deliver and not on any other consideration, including politics. Let's go for a break. When we come back, let's now switch on the second engine of education and find out, based on all her experiences, what should we do to have world-class education here in Ghana? If you are watching us and you are an admirer of Prof. Lydia Aziatu, the one who called Prof. One, or you are a student, staff, alumnus, friend, potential student, parent of a student in the University of Health and Allied Sciences, just go online, go to Facebook, Albert N. E. Okran, or Springboard Zone, and then write your comments on the excellent ideas Prof is sharing. Let's have this conversation big time on social media. Please don't go away.
Joe, what's it?
Enterprise Insurance would dear woman promo nana.
Hey, what it? Four coupons.
Womb.
Washing machine.
Womb.
Car washer.
Womb.
Baby.
Womb.
Obiadia.
Womb.
Buy or renew your existing motor insurance policy and win instant rewards such as fuel coupons and branded gift items in this year's Would Dear Woman Motor Insurance promo. You could also win an iPhone 14, front load washing machine, high pressure car washer, vacuum cleaner, and an auto tire inflator during the monthly raffles, and a slick clutch rocket motorbike at the end of the 6 months promotion. Make you no slacku. Call your insurance broker, agent, or visit any Enterprise Insurance branch and get your reward now. You can also call us on 0302-634-777. This promo is in partnership with NLE on the Caritas platform.
Terms and conditions apply.
Enterprise, your advantage.
When you can be anything, who will you become?
When you can go anywhere and never feel alone, how far will you go?
When you have the means to make your dreams real, when will you start?
When your voice can reach every ear, who will you inspire?
When your money can travel faster and further than you ever could, where will you send it?
When you can tell a story in every language, which ones will you tell?
When nothing can stop you, and everyone's behind you,
and the whole world awaits you, don't go alone.
Go with us.
Everywhere you go.
Welcome back to Springboard of Virtual University and to this conversation in the Dawn's Conclave, brought to you by the Springboard Roshu Foundation and proudly sponsored by the Enterprise Group, UMB Bank, and MTN Pulse, with media support from the graphic business and, of course, our friends here at the Multimedia Group. My guest for today is helping us to understand the journey she has had. Beautiful journey and beautiful lessons. But let's switch our attention now to education, a subject many of us are very intensely interested in. And let's find out from somebody who qualifies in two ways to talk about this subject. First, in the fact that she herself has had a beautiful academic journey and been top student at undergrad level, at master's level, broke the barrier in terms of a PhD to become prof. She set the bar very high for herself, and she says every time she thinks there's much more in that head that she can draw out. So she qualifies for her own sake or on her own merit. And secondly, she's managing education at the very highest level as Vice Chancellor of the University of Health and Allied Sciences in Hull. So she definitely knows a few things about education and what we should do differently. Prof, help us to appreciate, if you want world-class education at all levels in our country, what are some ideas we should be thinking about?
Okay, so for the first one, I'll mention flexibility in programs. I mentioned that I was a science student and I became arts before I entered the university. But I'm where I am today. It is high time as a nation we leave parents and their words to decide based on the interests and the skills of the child or the student to go into areas that they want to. I was dean for the School of Nursing and Midwifery for 5 years before I'm now a vice chancellor. You come and a child is crying for admission. Okay, well, why do you want to do this? Okay, so my auntie is outside. He said I should come and do this because I can come there and come and work. But you know how to be a nurse. Oh, because I travel. The person's interest is not there. That empathetic feeling to help to care for people is not there. So the flexibility I'm talking about is not to box people and force people to do programs that they are not interested in. And also to allow people to switch from a program to the other, because I didn't know and I entered. And I entered, I realized that, this one, I didn't know that it was like this. Can't I be allowed to do something else? Our educational system is cast in stone. Like you are admitted to do, let's say, pharmacy. In the same university, you can't, in the second year, change to another program unless maybe you re-enroll altogether. So that's aspect of growing to a level where there's that sync between universities and programs that you can easily continue another area is important moving forward, because the interest of people change based on the current situation.
So when that changes, you're saying we should allow them to make the change?
Yes, seamlessly. We should allow flexibility in choices.
That would be your point number one.
Yes.
What would be number two?
Number two is technology. For me, when I traveled, it was the first time I used a hoist to hoist patients who were bedridden, and it was so easy to hoist them to the bath them and bring them back to their bed. It was so easy. Here, we're using the manual efforts. Then there were gadgets that you can use to check the vital signs of the patient without having to put the thermometer in the axilla and wait for 3 minutes, shake it, and all those things. When you just apply the things on the body, it will give you all the readings at a click. So the world has moved on, and in some of the hospitals where you go, you are looking for a particular thing, like maybe gauze or something. There are some codes. You press it, the conveyor belt will deliver it to you. You don't need to travel, walk up and down to. You don't waste time. But we are far, far behind. And I think that let's put COVID-19 aside and let's put online teaching platforms aside. I'm talking about incorporating technology. For example, I'm leading a health university, incorporating technology in the fields, in the disciplines that we are teaching, in addition to the online platforms that we have. But technology, not only as a teaching approach, but technology in the discipline or the skill area that we are talking about, or you are training the person in.
Okay.
The next thing that I want to talk about is also about tradition or indigenous knowledge or culture. I don't know which word would be more appropriate. But we are leaving behind what we stand for. We are leaving behind what is important for our people. So recently I went to one of the hospitals, and there's a medical student, and so is my friend's daughter, and she can't speak Twi and the local language. So I always would tease her about one thing, body part or the other. So I asked her, Unufu yaweya. Then he said, what is Nufu? He said, buttocks. How can the Nufu be buttocks? You know, so moving forward, no matter how far in the future, is the fact that we should not leave our culture behind, no matter what. Be it the language, be it our traditional beliefs and practices, be it the cultural implications of whatever subject area. That is important for me, that in every aspect, every level, we carry our essence, our being, our culture, our tradition along to as far as we can go.
So, Prof, just to capture your thoughts so far, your educational prescriptions will be number one, flexibility in programs. Say, listen, if you don't like the pharmacy, just allow them to transition seamlessly to the next course that they want. Two is about the deployment of technology. And the third one, technology not just for the teaching, but also for the practice. And the third one is indigenous knowledge and cultural values and tradition must be carried with us at every level in our learning. What will be your fourth lesson?
So my fourth one, unfortunately, is quality assurance.
Why unfortunately?
Well, that has been the problem so far. And so if we are carrying the culture along, we must carry quality along, no matter what the prescription is. For me, quality is so, so important.
What's quality to you?
So quality, if the blind leads the blind, they fall in the dish, right?
Mm-hmm.
So quality in preparation of our teachers and faculty. Quality in terms of teaching and learning resources. quality in terms of the student admission processes. Who did you admit? And then quality in the delivery of programs and examinations thereof. And the quality in terms of the experiential learning opportunities or the practical training opportunities that we provide our students. So it transcends the teacher, the students, the delivery, the school. What do we have? And not just the theory, but what practical components are we going to incorporate? So quality in all these dimensions.
Have you been able to impose these, especially this fourth one, the quality assurance that you feel so strongly about? Have you been able to impose it on the UHAS since you became?
Oh, it was there before I came, fortunately. So UHAS, because we are training only health professionals, it's human life. So we can't compromise on our quality skill development training. Because if we miss it, then we are going to kill our own people. And that cannot happen. So UHAS, so far, what I went to see and what we are doing now, from the classroom to the field. The university is the only university that takes students across the 16 regions of the country. We deal a lot more with preceptors in the hospitals. We also have the programs in all the professional disciplines, from medicine, dentistry, pharmacy, nursing, midwifery, public health, physiotherapy, name them. We have all these programs. And what is unique is the fact that the person teaching is a professional himself or herself.
Right.
So that makes a difference.
Okay.
So for now, I don't have much to worry about. Perhaps maybe tomorrow. So we have to make sure it continues. So my prescription is that no matter how complex, how high, that quality assurance must be there.
Yes. The fifth one?
The fifth one for me is micro-specializations.
Wow. Explain.
So I don't believe in jack of all trades. I believe that the foundation, broad knowledge, but as we go higher, our students should be offered opportunity to have deeper insights in defined areas. And I believe that if we do that, it will help us to have more experts in the future. So, for example, you have a program. Let's say you are training a midwife who can do antenatal, deliver the child and all that. But we must have a midwife who is maybe an expert in women with diabetes or hypertension. So that midwife has the specialized knowledge in that area that every woman who is a diabetic or hypertensive or is a sickle cell, that midwife can take better care of that person because the person has trained and has gotten the insight that the general or the broader training didn't provide. And I think that for all fields, there must be that opportunity moving forward for people to have that micro-specialization. But in addition to all that, is the opportunity for people to have both local and international training exposures. It helps you to have a broader perspective. It helps you to see the other side of the person's experience. So I'm saying this because when I worked in the UK, how we do our things, how we talk to our patients, how we, I don't want to use the word shouts, or the language.
Communicate.
Exactly. When you travel, the way the nurses handle their patient, I love, you know, the way they talk to you, you love it. You feel at home. And I'm sure if somebody goes there for even 6 weeks or a month and comes back for one exchange program or the other, the person, I think, may have some change in the way the person will do his or her work. I'm a little biased to the health space because that is where I have been. Unfortunately, the university I'm leading is a health university. So I think that across programs, our professionals must learn how to communicate with their patients and their family members. No matter how skilled you are, if your communication is bad, the patients will not feel better or their relatives will not feel better.
No matter how skilled you are, let me take it even outside the health context. No matter how skilled you are, your clients, your students, your patients, the receivers of your knowledge will not enjoy or feel good around you because you don't communicate well. Those are the closing thoughts of Professor Lydia Ziatu, who has been our guest rounding up this excellent month of April as we've discussed not just leadership, but also how to deliver world-class education here in Ghana. Before I bring, I give her the chance to tell us why UHAS is the number one in the whole world. Of course, she's called Prof. One, so why she must tell us why UHAS is the number one. I just remind you to join this conversation on social media as we discuss the 10 points she's raised. Number one is equal opportunity. And I'm saying I'm giving a posthumous award to her father for having three wives, 30 children, and educating
more than
all
30.
Of them. Educating all of them.
More than 30.
More than 30. We salute him. The second point is don't give up. The third is personal reflection and self-assessment. That's my personal favorite because of what it led you to do in terms of setting records at every level. The fourth is mentorship. Mentor, allow yourself to be mentored, but also mentor others. And the fifth is succession planning. Appoint the right person, no matter what, the right person, the most qualified person, and not for any other consideration. On the area of world-class education, number one is flexibility in programs. Number two, deploy technology. Number three, indigenous knowledge, tradition, and cultural values must be passed on. Number four, quality assurance must be guaranteed non-negotiably. And finally, micro-specializations. She said she doesn't believe in generalization and jack of all trades. Be that person who can deliver a specialized skill, like a midwife who's a specialist in sickle cell patients or diabetic patients. That way, people can travel from far just to see you because of that skill. And she adds that to cap all this, if you get both local and international exposure, it has a touch on your career. Prof, this is beautiful. If you love what Prof has said, join us on Albert Eni Okran on Facebook or on Springboard Zoom and vote, and share your thoughts on the various reels, the various video postings, and the various slides that we're sharing online of what Prof is sharing with us today. Let the world know that's what you think is the ideal or the great point she has shared. And let's have this conversation over and over and over. Prof, on behalf of the Team Springboard, thank you for raising the bar for yourself and for the whole nurses, midwife fraternity, for women as a whole, and for the nation and the continent as at large, because for everything you do, it makes it possible, not just for women, but for all of us to see, once you've done it, it can be done. Do us a favor of looking into this camera and inviting us to come to UHAS, and let's find out what you have for us there.
Thank you very much. So the University of Health and Allied Sciences happens to be the only public university so far by law mandated to train only health professionals. We are located at Ho. We have a campus in Hohoi and a learning center at Warra. I trust that we have very, very seasoned faculty and team on the ground. We also have the flagship program, vocational training, that will send you across the country to gain skills. The university is the only university that has done very well bridging theory and practice gaps. So you start practicing from the very first year until you finish either your 4 years or your 6 years with us. I invite you to visit us. I invite you to enroll your wards, or you yourself as a ward desire to come to UHAS. We have very, very low percentage of admissions. So last year, for instance, we had over 13,000 applicants. We were able to enroll only 1,007 plus. So you have to qualify to apply. You have to do well in your SS level so that you can qualify to come. For some of the programs, you write an exam, you come for interview, and it's based on your qualification you enroll. So this is our websites. Educate yourself on the programs that are there, and I am ready to welcome you to the university. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Professor Lydia Ziyate. Thank you so much for joining us on Springboard, from the traditional to the virtual university. We have no campus. Our campus is in the airwaves. But it's been a great pleasure having you in this conversation. Rounding up our series called The Dawn's Conclave. You've heard from five vice chancellors sharing with you 5x5 life lessons and 5x5 prescriptions for world-class education in Ghana. Let's continue this conversation. So on behalf of Team Springboard and our sponsors, the Enterprise Group, MTN Pulse, UMB Bank, and our media partners, the Multimedia Group and the Graphic Business, which will publish a full transcript of this conversation on Tuesday. My name is Albert Okran, saying God bless you, God bless you, and God bless you.
So long, we've been here, we've been trying to break free, chains that hurt us in our minds, but no more, this is a turning point,
no more searching.
Of Africa, from Algeria to Zimbabwe. is where we turn. We turn around.
He's where we turn around.
He is where we turn around.
Make that change. Turn around.